If you're a physician who wants more autonomy in how you practice or fulfillment in your life, you're in the right place. This is the Change Physician Podcast, where our guests reveal how you can learn the mindsets, skills, and strategies to create the life you want without selling out your morals or values. But before we begin, I want to remind you of the free book giveaways, guides, and other physician resources available to you at thechangephysician.com. This is the Change Physician, episode 197. Welcome back to the Change Physician. I am Melissa Cady, the Challenge Doctor, here with my co-host, Dr. Kevin Cacaro. And we're here to bring you another episode with a chat that we will have on actually a topic called the veil of ignorance. Did I get that right, Kevin?
You did.
Okay, well, tell us more about this topic.
Yeah, so I was introduced this last year. I think it was last year, probably during kind of the upheavals we're having really about Black Lives Matter and things. And it came out of someone in your neck of the woods who I'm totally blanking on his name, but he wrote like The Ego is the Enemy, and he wrote some Stoic stuff. He's a Boston bookstore. I wish I should remember his name, because he's a really popular writer and he's got some interesting stuff. Younger guy. But anyway, the veil of ignorance is a thought experiment by John Rawls, who was a philosopher. This has been out for a long time, since 1971, to explore notions of justice in his book, A Theory of Justice. And the quote is, "Suppose that you and a group of people had to decide on the principles that would establish a new society. However, none of you know anything about who you will be in that society. Elements such as your race, income level, sex, gender, religion, and personal preferences are all unknown to you. After you decide on those principles, you will then be turned out into the society you establish." So the question is, how would that society turn out? And what does that mean for our society now? So the big thought experiment would be to actually debate this with your friends to figure out, how would you create a just society? Now, what I liked about this, and the first way I was kind of introduced, is instead of creating your own society, imagine that for whatever reason, who you are now, you are going to be taken from your place, and you are going to be immediately, you have no choice of this, immediately placed into a new culture, new society. Society has to be one that currently exists. Which would you choose? Knowing that you have no choice on what your sex is going to be, no choice on what your skin color is going to be, no choice on what your socioeconomic status is going to be, whether you are free, rich, poor, incarcerated or not, which society would you be in? And what I found really, really fascinating about this, because that truly is the measure of a just society, a society where it is fair for every person at every level to live within. And people will say, well, the purpose of, you know, well, how would you do that? How you treat your prisoners is directly related to how you view your citizens. So if you advocate for inhumane conditions for your prisoners, that is not a just society. In the same way, if you are a white male and you are advocating for things that potentially harm people who are people of color or people of different genders or ethnicities or whatever, other than you, from this place of privilege, that is not a just society.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very interesting thought exercise to do, because it made me think very differently about the country. And many people say, oh, Dr. Cacaro, you're being so woke. I don't even know what the hell that means, by the way, this woke thing that people throw around. What I do recognize, though, is the fact is this. If you are only thinking from your own perspective, that is ignorance. Yes. And that in itself is a point of privilege. And as being a physician, we are in a role where we are supposed to be the healers in many ways to those who come through our door. We have to be able to view things from a just lens. And there's a reason why justice has those blindfolds on. It's because the person in front of you is the person that you need to, you know, in ours fulfilling is to heal. In a justice system is to provide fair and equitable standing before the law. In our country, simply is not like, if you had like, would you step into America with that? Like knowing that you have to join the society, but you have no idea where you're going to be, you know, mm-hmm. how much money you're going to have, what's your sex, gender, whatever, whether you're a prisoner or not, would you choose to be in America?
No.
Why?
because I think, and you know, one thing, where do I start? I'm privileged in ways, you know,
I'm half Mexican, but I don't look like a typical Mexican. I've been asked if I'm Greek. I've been asked, so I have this blending into a society that looks like kind of somewhat forefathers, not blonde hair or anything like that. European descent, I have kind of that blending to make me have, I guess, those privileges based on visual. I've been fortunate to be able to access, because of my minority portion of me, to get a scholarship to go to UT Austin. So I was able to get an advanced higher education and just fortunate enough to find a way to afford, to go to medical school and privileges as a physician. People don't always talk about, that might be an episode, but maybe the privilege of just having the inner access of a difficult, broken medical system. That's one big reason why, being part of America, that's something that is a negative in my eyes. Socialized medicine has its own issues. I understand that, but there is an astronomical cost and challenge in navigating the system, which I could give multiple examples. But
so you're basically saying you're a white female of higher mm-hmm. socioeconomic status,
mm-hmm.
and there are privileges that are associated with that.
Yeah. So if I didn't know what I was going to be and I didn't have the life I have, and I end up being somebody else based on this experiment or this thought experiment, my life, if I was in a bad part of town, lower socioeconomic status, and I'm minding my own business, and I just happen to be of darker pigment, and someone is looking for someone with my coloring, even though they may not have a good way because they're not around a lot of people of color to distinguish between someone who's just darkly pigmented with multiple other features. We'll just say black person, which I always find that's a weird way to term people anyway, darker pigment person. But, there's a lot of judgment, assumption made, and they think that I'm apparently guilty of a crime that was committed down the street and I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I could put my hands up, have just a baseball cap in my hand, and get shot dead. 12 times shot, by the way, this has happened.
So people who we were watching, we're not going to show this.
No, it is. I started crying when I first saw it.
It was pretty unbelievable. It was a clip that had been taken and had been shared of a young black man
mm-hmm.
who
at least 20 feet away, 15 feet away.
Yeah, I mean, it was a garage or whatever, and he comes out and it looks, they're shining flashlights on him, and he kind of goes behind like a refrigerator. And I could almost, in that time, I can understand that because, okay, you're in a different situation and let's not introduce hindsight bias or whatever, but it looked like they shot him once, he hit the ground, and then he's there and they have him covered and then he lifts up his hands like this and they shot him like 11 more times.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was unbelievable. Like, yeah, it was extraordinarily disturbing. And this stuff happens. And I guess this is the part that really irritates me is the people aren't really willing to put on the veil. And what I mean by that, they ignore the fact that there is a privilege in everything that they do. Mm-hmm. They seem to be ignorant of that. And I guess if you talked about being lower socioeconomic status, and people say, well, I worked really hard to get what I have. It was all, I'm a self-made person. Well, first of all, that's totally BS. Because there's always somebody.
Community influences you.
Influence you. I know somebody who came from a pretty rough background and kind of would verbalize stuff like that. I'm like, that's interesting. Well, who had a really influence on your life? And it was a person, it was a teacher. And because of that teacher recognizing their potential
mm-hmm.
and kind of becoming a mentor and steering them, their life became completely different.
Yep.
They weren't self-made.
Yep.
If you come from a family that is whole, where you're not being beaten at night, that you have food, that is a point of privilege as compared to other people. So this idea that someone can just be dropped into America without, I would say with a tabula rasa, so they like wiped clean and put into any setting, and then they're going to magically rise to the top again, is complete and utter crap.
Yeah.
You know, you become, wipe all of your personal experiences. We put you in a family that is full of drug abuse, that is housing instability, food instability, that is potential threats all around you, that changes the neurophysiology of your brain. And you're going to think that your life is going to be the same? No. And the fact that we tolerate this stuff in this country is really upsetting to me. The other part is we have this leaked Supreme Court opinion. Like, I don't care, honestly, what your opinions or what anybody's opinions about the act of abortion itself is. What I do care about is the right of the individual to control their own body.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And that actually, there's another thought exercise this kind of leads into. Let me see if, I don't want to bring too much, but it's kind of very, very relevant to this particular aspect of, okay, just society, the veil of ignorance. This one's called Thompson's Violinist. And this is very, very relevant to right now with the Supreme Court, kind of this leaked opinion. And in Thompson's Violinist is that you wake up in the morning, you find yourself back to back in bed with an unconscious violinist. A famous unconscious violinist. Like, I don't know any famous violinists, otherwise I'd use the name specifically. But this violinist has been found to have a fatal kidney ailment, and the Society of Music Lovers has canvassed all the available medical records and found that you alone have the right blood type to help. They have therefore kidnapped you, and last night the violinist's circulatory system was plugged into yours so that your kidneys can be used to extract poisons from his blood as well as your own. If he is unplugged from you now, he will die, but in 9 months, he will have recovered from his ailment and can safely be unplugged from you. The question being, are you obligated to keep the musician alive, or do you cut him loose and let him die because you want to?
Well, that's your choice. I mean, you have to live with the fact that you were the one person that could have saved him and you chose not to. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, well, that's this choice, right?
Technically,
and so there's excellent these thought responses to this and say, well, no, that you don't have no obligation to keep him alive. Some people may say you have to, you do. The argument being is that
how much are you going to pay me?
Yeah, well, the true argument that I hear you kind of using this place is not about the violinist, but really your choice to control your body, because the violinist isn't a person with rights, but rather that they have no right to your body. They have no right to your body and the life preserving functions that it provides. And so if you think about this in many ways, this is very similar to this issue of abortion.
Yeah.
Because what we're basically saying is that people do not have the right to control their own body and have choice to do what they wish with their body, because their rights are being assumed by someone else.
Yep.
So if you are not willing to have a violinist scratch your body for 9 months that you could save, I mean, we can play this all day. If you're not willing to go out and donate your kidney to some random person on the street, why can't we do that? Yep. Why can't we say, you know what, we have an organ problem here. You have two working kidneys. So you now are going to donate your kidney to this person because they need a kidney. Is that fair?
You know, I don't think it's fair per se. I think it's all based on the beliefs of the individual, just like an abortion. And here's the thing. There's more than one religion out there. So which religion is going to run the Constitution of the United States? There's a reason there's a separation of church and state. So by golly, whatever your beliefs are, someone else doesn't necessarily believe the same thing. So,
and that's another great thing, you know, the veil, right? So if you go in and you say, well, okay, well, I want a country that's established, it's a theocracy based upon whatever my religion may be. Okay, well, you're in a minority and you're not. So in this country, people are running around trying to make, we want to make this fundamentally, I can't even use Christian because a lot of what they're spouting is not really Christianity. Okay, you can make your country all that. You can control everybody's decisions, and we're going to scrub everything from anything that you don't want them to see in their textbooks that has any challenging to you. But if you come to that community, you're going to be Muslim.
Yeah.
You're going to be a Muslim woman. Would you want that? And So I do think, I mean, if you're getting mad or if you're getting upset, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
Is to be willing to kind of question your own beliefs and be able to step back enough and view society from the lens of somebody else.
Yeah.
And particularly the people whose these decisions tend to reflect upon the most. You may not think that we have a problem with police, but if you are not in a minority population that has an experience with that, some direct experience with it, then I would really, really hope that you actually get some personal perspectives. And most importantly, find information that challenges your current belief systems. That's sort of like the scientific process, right? It's like we have a hypothesis that the world runs this way. Well, the way you test that hypothesis is to challenge it. Mm-hmm. So what's the counter evidence out there and how good is it? And unfortunately, for a lot of this stuff with what we see in society today, there is an abundance of counter evidence that gets ignored.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the lens you look through, sometimes you can watch a video and probably make an excuse for the situation or whatever. But, and we do have to recognize we're in a country that is very lax on guns. And we live in a world where we are humans who are animals, by the way, who are organisms that have great cognitive abilities, but still as animals, we are trying to perceive threat. So we have, you know, police officers, victims or criminals, whatever the situation may be. And if you look at it, how in the world are we going to have, for police themselves, it's understandable that they may be frightened. And they are fearing for their own life and they may make a poor choice, but there's also, it's not an easy job, I'll say that, but there's definitively overtly obvious, ridiculous things happening to people that should not be escalating into a place where they die and lose their life just because in the wrong place, wrong time. And let me just also clarify, when I say lower socioeconomic, it doesn't mean that they're of dark complexion. Obviously, it can run the gamut of anybody. But unfortunately, in this country, if we actually look at the real history, not just what are, generally speaking, a lot of things that are perpetuated, but there are a lot of situations that put people of color in a less privileged position. So hence, we have more people that we see in a lower socioeconomic state. I know I went on a tangent there. Pull me back there, Kevin. there was a whole point to all of this, but it's infuriating because I feel like there's, let me give an example. I have friends who think that racism here in America is not as bad as other places. I don't know. I haven't been in all these other places, but there is a distinct difference between overt racism and indoctrinated, subtle, the things that are embedded within the system and or how people think, behave. You may not be in the law or put out on a billboard that we don't believe your kind should be around, but there's a lot of behaviors and a lot of things that are happening that represent racism. So I'm not like a racism expert, but I have, I feel really terrible for things that happen out there. Cause I think if that was me and I wasn't like this experiment you're talking about imagining yourself could be anybody in society, how horrible of a life to think that just because of this feature of you or this characteristic or your creed or anything, that you're put in a marginalized situation or a very threatened position where you could just lose your life for just being that kind of person. So
I do think there's a little bit of a false equivalence if people are using that argument and say, well, we're not as racist as that country. That's a horrible argument. It's like saying, well, I don't abuse my spouse because I only beat them once a month. And that guy across the street beats his spouse 5 days a week. So it's not as bad for them. Seriously? You know,
I know it's not
they're
as
more
bad.
Racist over there. So we're not that.
But that comes from privileged white people many times.
It does. It does.
Because they don't live with the insidious stuff that's embedded out there.
And that's just a horrible statement to use. I mean, that's just, well, yeah, we're racist, but we're at least we're not as racist as them. What about being better? How about, shouldn't we be better? And it is a point of privilege to be able to say that statement, because you're not the one who's, because I can guarantee you that racism, if you're the one being affected by it, is pretty intense. It's like, you know, we talk about mental health and people talk about trauma. Well, I didn't have, you know, 65 years of trauma daily, every day. So your trauma is not as bad. Really? It's
still trauma.
It's still trauma.
Yeah.
It's still trauma. And the other, you know, one of the parts about some of these thought experiences, the really big one for me is our judicial system and how, what do we do for, like, for people in our justice system, and specifically those that we're incarcerating? And the easy, this is the part I think that starts driving me crazy, because I used to think like this so much because it was easy. You let your beliefs kind of say, well, this is unfair. That's a horrible person. They should rot in that jail forever. And the danger with that kind of thinking, that when we're using judgment rather than evidence and rather what the actual goal that we're trying to do is, it becomes this very, very slippery slope. Because then we start, you know, the whole point of having, if you design prisons around retribution rather than rehabilitation, mm-hmm. what is your goal? Do you actually think that when you put people in hell holes, that they're beaten, you know, raped by other prisoners because there's no protection, really don't have a set, like, they actually are becoming more and more criminalized because of all the activities they're in there. Mm-hmm. That makes more sense. That there's no, that's not justice. First of all, that's not justice at all. That's vengeance. And what do you think when they're going to get released? Or yeah. are you then going to say, well, they should never be released? How is that fair?
I do believe that many people can be rehabilitated. I would think most, and I don't have the data, but I will say that there are some amazing programs out there that people that used to be in prison, or they're trying to reach back out to the prison community and give them skills and purpose and be part of a community and to give back and have literally changed their lives. I know that there are people that have that opportunity because they're put in a different direction. They've been set with skills or privileges and ways because they have that relationship with whoever is trying to help them out. I do think there are a couple of bad seeds, so to speak. There's going to be some that are just like not rehabilitatable. I would say that's not the majority, in my opinion. But yes, I think that as a community, for we're spending so much money on each criminal, like, why wouldn't you do things that actually breed more love and acceptance and the very things they probably were deprived of that helped create the criminal that they became, and give them better opportunities and actually not hate the world and not perpetuate the same things they used to do because that's what they know and that's all they know how to survive. Like, why don't you give them other things that they recognize that make them feel good about themselves so that they treat others better? But that's my opinion.
Well, and I think there's some good data on that. I know, like, if you look at sort of the Scandinavian, like, if I had to pick any countries right now, like, if I just had to pick, like, if I had the veil of ignorance on and all of a sudden tomorrow I'm going to be in another society, the societies that I would be in would be the Scandinavian countries, and probably Norway specifically, because their prison system is set up about rehabilitation, not revenge in any way. They have a pretty strong social network. They still have a lot of upward mobility that's present with it. And so that's kind of the way I would go. But I kind of look back, like, this is like, you look at old Kevin and look at, you know, that vengeful, judgmental, you know, this ideas about, like, this person, you know, this person gets to be striked down. I remember getting upset at the ACLU because they were defending some, like, white supremacists like 20 years ago, and I didn't get it. But the mission behind the ACLU was, look, they looked at it, it's civil liberties. And so civil liberties are civil liberties, whoever you are. Mm-hmm. And you should be willing to defend those liberties, even for the worst individuals, just to preserve the sanctity for the best individuals. Because if you're not doing that, you're on this slope that can very easily turn into something like a lot of what we have now, with vast amounts of inequities, where people's, you know, our rights are infringed upon, not in the way most people are spouting the rights upon, but are fundamentally being infringed upon the right, you know, rights of control of ourselves, because we're not willing to, or we think it's okay for others. And if it's okay to do it to the them, what really quickly happens is the them starts getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the people that are not subjected to it are smaller and smaller and smaller. And that is not what I would call a just society at all. It's I think that's the other part about this is, if, imagine is you want the, if you had to go through the court system, would you want a court system to treat you as fair as possible? If you want that kind of court system, you're going to want it to be as fair as possible to everyone. Similarly, if you're going to be subjected to a law that infringes upon your personal rights or not, you want it to be fair as possible such that similar things can't happen. Because I can guarantee you, if you're sitting there saying, oh God, I want to overturn Roe v. Wade, I want to take a right, a woman's control her own body. Well, then I'm going to strap a violinist to you for 9 months without any choice. Or I'm going to take one of your kidneys because I think that this person over there needs one and you have two. So I don't mean to be controversial in our episodes here, but I do want people to think a little bit about what they do and think a little bit more about the point of privilege that you are. If you're a physician in America, you are privileged. I don't care who you are. You have a strong socioeconomic background just in the profession that you are on. You have strong income stability. There are some rare exceptions, sure, but overall you're pretty safe compared to most of society. And we need to be willing, though, that not everybody's there. And so what are we doing to actually make sure that this, that the societies that we live in and the laws that we advocate for and the politics that we advocate for treat as many people as fairly and justly as possible, and the majority rather than few? Because you'll never know what happens if you flip into the majority when you're one of the few privileged. That's going to be a whole different ballgame for you if you just want to look from a selfish way.
Yeah, and enforce the laws that are supposed to maintain that just society, and not, I just feel like there's a kind of the same thing you talk about, slippery slope. It's just, if you don't hold the integrity of that system that you create, I mean, you have to hold to that. Otherwise, like you said, it goes downhill. And I feel like there's a lot of our country that is going in the wrong direction, unfortunately. And I know I'm not the only one that senses that. So I hope we get our act together. I just don't know. And I think it's okay to be a little controversial too. I mean, I think we're too far away from having these difficult conversations, and people are trying to avoid them at times. So, but it's hard when people are so rigid with their beliefs, they're not willing to step back and think about things a little differently. But
yeah. Well, I think that's it. You can have firm values, but flexible beliefs is one of the better things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Where, you know, rigid beliefs really can become your own prison. Speaking of somebody who's had very rigid beliefs, it's like so much of this is personal experiments. And
oh yeah, a lot of us
journal of life. Yeah. God. Yeah. It's just crazy.
Yeah, like you said, values. Like, yes, there's a lot of people different beliefs just from a religion standpoint. We talk about abortion. I mean, there could be people have a belief of sacrificing humans and killing people, and that doesn't, you know, do well with the values of preserving life. And
Specifically about abortion, Carl Sagan had a really good argument about this. This can completely ignored, as usual with most of the stuff. He's like, well, if we want to have a talk about life and preserving life, then we should be looking at viability. And that, I think, is one of the better arguments to look at.
Yeah.
But people, well, it's from the time that the sperm hits the egg. Well, you know how many spontaneous abortions occur?
All the time.
And if you're going to say that those are then in some way, shape, or form the foundations of life, then men, you should never be masturbating, for sure.
Yeah.
Because you're spurting out potential half humans all over the place. And that's, you're killing them all. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And why don't, if we, I think if in particular in this country, nobody wants a lot of abortions. Nobody no. does. There's nobody out there who's saying, I want it. Everybody should have an abortion every day going down. That's the perfect thing. Nobody likes it. The only people, the people I know that have had, it is not an easy decision. The only people I've ever known to have actually had an abortion, it was not easy. Mm-hmm. It is not something that you think about and go, oh, I'm glad I, you know, this is the greatest thing in the world. It may have made a really strong impact on your life. It may in a positive, maybe some say in a negative way, but nobody's saying that that needs to be done. But if we want to talk rationally about it, let's talk rationally about like what life is in a way that is more aligned with the science. Mm-hmm. And certainly this stuff where people are, oh, 6 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever this stuff is, it's nonsense when you, because we're not really, again, we're not looking at the science and things, and we're also not thinking about it from the perspective of the individual. I certainly don't want some rando violinist strapped to me for 9 months. I don't think that's fair. Even if maybe I went to the concert the night before and really enjoyed it. I didn't, you know, just because I went to the concert and enjoyed the violinist doesn't mean that I need to have them strapped in the bed with me for 9 months.
Now, but if it was your brother, you might, you know, be willing to endure that. But if you liked your brother,
it's still your choice, though. It comes down to your choice. And if we're going to take away choice from that, like, man, there's a whole lot of kidneys we can grab.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a lot of that stuff going on out there without your consent. Anyway, well, why don't you take us out?
Sure. Well, thank you all for joining us on this episode of the Change Physician Podcast, where we discussed the veil of ignorance as well as Thompson's violinist. As always, if you got any comments, you know, particularly if we're challenging you to think, feel free to email me directly at drkevin@thechangephysician.com. You can join the physician, you can join the community, whether you're a physician or physician ally, at thechangephysician.com. And until next time, stay well.
Thank you for joining us today on the Change Physician Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please let us know by going to thechangephysician.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the free book giveaways, guides, and other physician resources available to you simply by joining the community at thechangephysician.com.